Welcome to Beyond Trauma, a guide for your healing journey. This podcast is a project of Beyond Healing Media, where we value each person's humanity and what life experiences shaped you to be who you are.
We, as the hosts of this podcast, seek to embody these ideas as we explore things like trauma, its impact on the body and mind, and even how it has shaped the way that we are in relationships. Trauma is not the end of our journey. So within this podcast, we will also discuss what it's like to heal, move forward, and grow as a human who has experienced pain. Welcome back to Beyond Trauma Podcast, a guide for your healing journey. We are here in studio with Bridger, Melissa, and myself, and we're going to, I think, just start out by sharing a listener email that we got, a question, and then we've kind of from there planned the episode around that. It was a beautiful question that I think is very common and can open up a pretty vast discussion.
So I got this email, and it just starts out, here's a question for the podcast. Can one fail at EMDR? I know I can't, but I'm afraid to. What if my system's reactions are wrong and I don't do what you as a therapist want me to do?
So many layers to that. Yeah. Like, I want to answer each one of those. It's like a package of questions, really.
Yes.
Each one individually.
Yeah.
And I think, too, to broaden it past just EMDR therapy, like that's one specific type of therapy or approach, but therapy as a whole. I think I get that sentiment from people often is like, what if I can't do this? Or what if this doesn't really like fix the problem? Or I don't know, my other therapist fired me. Like those kinds of like
language.
Feelings. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Melissa, what comes up for you as you hear that question or those questions?
So I immediately go to something that I'm not even sure is really super helpful, but I'll say it anyway, which is the importance of metaphors. Because in the question is an assumption. And the assumption is that failure is a construct that could be associated with the act of therapy.
Right.
And that has to do with the metaphor that is lurking behind the understanding of what therapy is.
Mm.
If failure is an option, then that means that therapy is a test, is a hurdle to jump over that I could fail to jump over. And so I think like my immediate reaction is, whoa, we need a totally different metaphor.
Recontextualize this thing.
So I think a metaphor that might be interesting to explore would be a metaphor of dance, a metaphor of journey. Could you fail to get to the destination in a journey? Yeah, but what if the journey is not about going to a particular place? What if it's about exploring an unknown territory? Then how do you know if you have succeeded in doing that or not? Well, it's a little more complicated. And so I think like immediately I start looking for a metaphor that feels truer to the experience of therapy. And also feeling curiosity around, you know, the reasons why culturally we use metaphors that are so heavy laden with, harshness and conflict and pass-fail and good-bad and, much more left-brained, capitalistic metaphors rather than right-brained, creative, artistic metaphor. So I don't know if we want to go there, but that's where my head went first.
I'm also kind of like interested in that way of thinking, because to me, when that question came across, it sort of reveals, I think, a fear-laden perspective, which tells me quite a bit about just how this person may have conceptualized relationships in general, that it is something that I can fail at and that I can then like be rejected from.
Right. I could disappoint you.
Yeah.
And once again, the metaphor of therapist as teacher that is grading me is lurking.
Well, here's this is an interesting caveat to that. Because I I have heard, we have talked about even the conceptualization of therapy as a dance.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can have a bad dance partner.
You can.
And that's the interesting kind of nuance to that metaphor, because for me, I don't know that I'm a great client as a therapy client. Just in that I've had many therapists like that they just didn't go well. Like it just wasn't a good like fit, and it felt to me like I don't really know. And that's kind of some of the origin story of why I wanted to get into doing actual clinical therapy and not just research psychology, is because I did not have good experiences in therapy. And you can look at that many ways, I guess. If I was a bad client, I don't know. But in that, I want to maybe see if it's interesting to you all to spin on that, of like, what does it mean to be a bad client?
Because mm-hmm.
if you can fail, I think that assumes that there is that dynamic.
There's a good, bad, pass, fail.
Yeah.
It feels like such an objective perspective over the therapy relationship and over the people participating in the therapy relationship. If therapy can be failed or a client can be bad, we're assigning these objective values to to grade or to standardize the process, where if we're more so emphasizing its relationship, we don't in my construct, there's not like a way to fail relationship. There may be struggles in relationship and ruptures, mm-hmm. and we may be out of sync and we may not align on everything, but there's not something to fail in it. We can fail mm-hmm. an objective outcome. A marriage can fail because we could get divorced and no longer be married, but that relationship in and of itself isn't failing. It's just facing a journey, like mm-hmm. many different...
Yeah, transition
yes.
in that way.
Yes.
I think there is a version that certainly... a lot of therapists have experienced, where a client comes in as what philosophically is called a bad actor. Mm-hmm. And it's this concept of, I show up under the pretense of being open to this experience, but actually I'm here for a totally different purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And in the dance metaphor, that would be somebody that shows up and says, well, I want to do this dance with you, but they have no intention of actually participating in the dance in a meaningful way. They're the bad actor basically means that they do not have good intentions. Their intentions are somehow
nefarious.
Nefarious intentions. Yes. So is there such a thing as a nefariously intended client? Strangely, there totally is.
It's a defense mechanism for sure.
Well, but it's actually really rare. It's so rare. Every once in a while, we'll have kind of a unique situation where it's like, what beep are you here? You know, like clearly it's not because you want help. But that is so rare in comparison to the person that desperately wants to do the dance, but is just a little clumsy or has mm-hmm. never been in a partnered dance before and has to learn what this is like. Like, there's a leader and a follower and this is the rhythm. And, you know, there's a pretty steep learning curve. And that, I think, is a much more common experience than the bad actor experience.
I appreciate having these two metaphors to kind of juxtapose as we're looking at something that is intended to be a flowing, mm-hmm. very organic, very natural process, as the way we practice therapy is mirroring of
mm-hmm.
The nurturing and maturational relationships of early development. Like mm-hmm. that's really what we're going for, is reparenting in a lot of ways and helping this person to grow into a well-nourished, well-loved person.
Mm-hmm.
When you add something that is objective into that mix, like some people practice EMDR, there is, I feel, some inherent sort of friction with that first way of practicing that.
Yeah.
No, this is just an organic, natural, relational process, but we also have an objective. So it's then like, oh, well, does that mean I was with you with the first thing, but does that mm-hmm. mean I can fail the second thing?
Mm-hmm.
Can I fail the EMDR part?
Mm-hmm. Or could I fail the CBT part?
Right.
You told me to do this homework, these
mm-hmm.
exercises, and oh my God, I forgot, or I got too overwhelmed, or I tried and it didn't go well. Or I tried to do that meditation exercise and I actually felt worse afterward. Did I fail?
Yeah, or I fell asleep.
Yes. To that I would say, great, that's totally the point. Unless it's a dissociative response, then that's something different.
Not good.
We can explore. But I'm curious what you guys sense at the heart of the question, because I don't think it's the bad actor version of it, right? The intention, I think, is so sincere and so pure, at least that's what the question feels like. So what is at the heart of the question, can I fail therapy? Like, what do you guys understand as sort of the fear underneath the layer of the question?
I would love to hear our individual takes on that rather than somebody says something and then we all kind of join in and take that.
Okay. So you answer, then Jen answers.
But do you have your
Mine's just immediately going back to what you've already shared in that of what's at the heart of it and noticing like the assessment of pass fail and of self in relationship.
Yeah.
And how that, like, to me, there's like something so substantial in the core of that, that then that gets projected upon all other things. Mm-hmm. I think in a group consultation call, I had someone sharing about a case and then she said, did I do that right?
Yeah.
I mean, just like that kind of perpetual, like, am I succeeding or am I failing?
Yes.
Am I doing this right or wrong? Those constructs of when I come into relationship with people, am I going to be able to meet the expectations mm-hmm. of me? And to me, that would go all the way back.
Yeah. Yes.
So I want to say something to that, and then I'll give my answer. I know that I wasn't supposed to, like...
No, it's okay.
Yeah, here, I'm failing at the
you're not.
Construct that you gave us, Bridger.
You're introducing a new movement.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm going to improv here for a second.
I'll follow.
A little freestyle. So, like, I think that most of us, at least in the U.S., and cultures that are very similar to the U.S., have no idea how much we are culturally programmed to understand everything as a pass-fail dynamic. A really easy example is the cultural concept of time. For instance, in our westernized capitalistic culture, there is being early, there is being on time, and there is being late. And each of those three things has exactly 1 minute difference. And that is how granular we are about our pass-fail experience. You can either be early, on time, or late. And there's very, very little wiggle room in the difference of being appropriately on time. And then you go to a culture that has a totally different construct of time. And, you know, 20 minutes late, well, they're not even paying attention to on time because that is not their construct of time. Mm-hmm. And we culturally can look at them that and say, well, that's rude. But for instance, in a culture, in a more island-based culture, we can flippantly chalk that up to, well, that's island time. Mm-hmm. They're just not as concerned about such things, which is completely erroneous. What is actually
true? Very objectifying.
Very objectifying. Yeah. What is actually true is they're concerned about something else. In that particular culture, they have a high value on always finishing what you have begun. You never leave a project unfinished. If you were in the middle of helping a friend do something, you would never in the middle, in a million years, walk away from what they're doing in order to go meet somebody else.
It's 2 o'clock.
Yeah, it's 2 o'clock. I got to go. I have another meeting. Yeah. What? No, like we're right in the middle of moving this piece of furniture. Like you're going to help me finish because you committed to this.
Yeah.
So it's a prioritization of commitment over punctuality. Mm-hmm. And that's simply a value choice. So it's a very long way of saying.
You say the values because that's a part of mine as well.
Well, but I think what's relevant is that these kinds of ways of talking about therapy is so laden with cultural values.
Yep.
And the ways that we make sense of our identity in relationship to other people and culture, that we cannot make sense of why we feel the way we feel when we just think about our own individual life. And so that really factors in, is we have to kind of zoom out and say, whoa, we're kind of in a major situation here together as a culture where we prefer perfection over the human experience. We actually believe that it's better to be perfect than to be deep in relational experience and trust each other to navigate the complexities of that, that performance is more important than our individual felt experience of something. And that objectification of a human being and almost prioritizing this robotic-like experience then carries over to, wait a second, what is the perfect client?
Yeah.
How do I, somebody please just tell me how to be the perfect client so I can be that. And when we understand that that is so laden with values, we can step back and say, what if we use a totally different set of values?
Yes.
And I think that's what I'm getting at in a really, really roundabout way.
Yeah. I think it's illustrative very much so of a person's values at the core of it, in that it seems to me that failure and fearing disappointing the other while also not doing something correctly are very important. Mm-hmm. And so to disappoint an other, what could that mean? And that's where I pick up on some of the things you were saying, Jen, of going back to, well, perhaps there's already templates that you're pretty sure you are disappointing mm-hmm. to others. Mm-hmm. So maybe you're afraid that this thing could also prove that,
yeah.
perhaps. In another way, I think there's fear that maybe I can't do anything right. And if I try to do the thing that I am hoping will heal me, and I can't do that right, what does that mean?
Yeah.
It means I can't heal.
And that's what the other place in my mind went, is yeah. the fear of being broken beyond repair.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which so many people come to EMDR already with that fear, mm-hmm. and there's this promise of...
this like, could be different.
Oh, right. Yeah. This one might be different. So I think, you know, no matter what intervention you're applying, there can feel that pressure, but I feel it more with EMDR clients of like, what if this fails? I've tried therapy for years in all of these other ways, mm-hmm. and what if I fail at this and I'm still that broken client that CBT showed me I was and that DBT said I yes. was, and
yeah.
hopefully EMDR will be different. Mm-hmm. I think what was interesting in the question is the client directly spoke about your, I don't remember the language now, but like not wanting to disappoint you in it. Is that what it said, or did I just hear that?
One moment.
It certainly did had
I,
that
like,
flavor.
I was going to say, oh, yes, feel yes, it.
What if my system's reactions are wrong and I don't do what you want me to?
I oh. don't do what you want me to. That I think that was the piece that said, like, this goes, this is relationally,
yeah.
so relationally driven of, it's not just about accomplishing the task or not, but it's about in this relationship with you,
mm-hmm. yeah.
what we, if I fail?
I feel as though we should have done like a disclaimer or like a warning label to this, because this is a level of scrutiny to those words that's, I don't know if people are always expecting. Like, because even the way they're putting together these sentences, my mind is like looking behind them of like, oh, there's some, mm-hmm. that's an interesting way to put that sentence mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm. To me, that could show a lot
well, I know
of
like,
read your
like,
mail type
yeah,
of.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like kind of confirm people's worst fears about therapists. Yeah. Like actually, yes, we're totally analyzing every movie.
Yeah, like,
and every word you say. And I heard that tone and that raise of the eyebrow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But and that's where I want to just name that. And Jen, I'm curious about your face. But I want to name it because to me, it feels important to just in a way own that is going on in my head.
Right.
To think, but it's not with the intention to try and hurt. It's no. to me with the intention of just using what I've learned over the years of my practice and over the study that I've gone through to try and make sense of what it is you're telling me. Mm-hmm. And I don't just do that with the actual words you're using, but I inform that with what's between the words, how you're saying them, mm-hmm. Et cetera. So to me, it's, you know, that language right there that, Jen, you were curious about, it is so much about what do you want me to do? Because that's what I want this interaction to be about. Like, less about my healing, but really about what you want me to do.
Right.
There's a piece of that mm-hmm. that's true, it feels.
Yeah.
Under the context of I'm trying to pursue therapy and heal, but at the same time, there's so much in me that just wants you to be happy with me.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that what does feel very authentic is that the only thing that we have to interact with is those words.
Yeah.
If there was a real human being with us, what would happen is a very sincere curiosity and question
yes.
about what their experience of asking that question is and what that means to them. And I think in a therapeutic setting, that's exactly what we do. We don't assume that our initial interpretation is for sure accurate, but the experience of hearing these questions over and over informs some of our assumptions about what this means. And yeah. what is held, because for instance, that fear of, am I broken beyond repair, is tremendously common, almost to the point of feeling a bit universal mm-hmm. of, you know, this thing that feels so challenging in me or so confusing in me, it's been with me for so long that it feels like I could no more change it than change the color of my eyes. And so that feeling, if somebody's coming into therapy with that feeling, I think fuels that worry of, can this really be different? And we, because we've been in those moments with people so often, can absolutely say, well, sure. But that doesn't negate the original fear and worry of, am I, you know, banging my head against a wall that's never going to move? I would feel curious for you guys about, like, do you think there is any version of therapy just kind of not being the right thing at a right time, right? Like, is there a space and a time where you just get that feeling of, this isn't what is needed. This isn't the medicine for the current issue. Because that, I think, more than can I fail at therapy, does feel like a potential reality, at least to me.
My gut says, and I'm open to like conversation on this, my gut says that therapy itself, no, but the type of therapy, yes.
Yeah.
The focus, it's a good nuance. And the tool, like whatever we're doing in it, yes. But to me, and that is just revealing of my conceptualization of what therapy is, it's a relationship.
I was going to say, a healthy and safe relationship, if that equals therapy, then there's never a time that that's not good for a human.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But it's, what are we doing in that?
Yeah. If it's, and what are we putting on that relationship to do?
Yes.
I think that that is where we have to have an ongoing kind of dialogue with, like, what are we really desiring in this time? What feels like very pressing to you? And what do you want help with in this moment? Mm-hmm. And I can help inform some of those things of, you know, maybe pointing to things that feel a little bit deeper rather than just like, well, you know, I'm just like not happy with my job. Okay, well, let's like maybe open up some of that. But if it's more so like, you know, I can't get over this addiction and it's threatening to ruin my entire life. Yeah. And that's going to shift my focus away from more of these meaning focused interventions to maybe a little bit more practical. Mm-hmm. Like, let's get some measures in place to help support you very practically rather than dig deep on these kind of deeper things.
Well, I think there may be like a time where a client would say, it's not what I need right now because there's healthy, safe relationships and other aspects of my life. Like, there's seasons of life you can go through and say, I don't have another place to make meaning of my experiences and to process and to share with another person. And those would be those times that therapy could be that.
Yeah.
Aside from what the goal is in it or what we're trying to accomplish, but even just for that relationship aspect. But that doesn't mean every human needs to be in therapy all the time. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't be a terrible thing.
No, there's certainly worse ideas.
Especially the way that we're talking about. That's beautiful.
Very true. Yeah. Well, and I think what I experience pretty often with people is that the goal that they come in with is not the goal that we end up working on.
Right.
And I think what can feel challenging about that is that moment where they realize, like, oh, this thing that I came in wanting to be different, that may not be changeable or fixable. So I'll give an example. I recently had a client come in and say, what I need from therapy is for you to help me deal with the fact that my boss is a jerk. I need this job. My family needs the money. I need to stay. And I need you to help me just deal with this stress, with this tension. I need some coping skills so that I can stay in this job. I'm like, cool, we can do that. And as we begin to explore, what comes out is like, this is not just your run-of-the-mill rough boss situation. This is a full-on toxic, abusive dynamic. Like, calling her at midnight to berate her for not doing her job well enough. Like, not okay. Yeah. Not okay.
It's different.
Yeah. It's a little different than like, work is stressful and I need some help.
And I don't feel acknowledged.
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. And so pretty quickly into it, I told her, I don't think that I can help you do the thing that you want to do because everything in me just wants to tell you to get the hell out as soon as possible. Yeah. And how can we figure out how to make money? Really, any other way? Like, any other way. There were kind of several weeks of conversation around, like, her body truly believing that this was her only option. And we were able to, you know, track that into her past of that feeling of stuckness, and I must tolerate this kind of treatment because it's what's best for me, whoa, right? Yeah. So we ended up being able to shift that, and cool twist of things, you know, she's no longer in that job, and we were able to kind of support her through that process. But if we just looked at, did she pass or fail therapy based on that initial goal, that doesn't look real positive. Mm-hmm. But based on what she actually needed as a full human, then it was very successful. And so I think being open to discovering what therapy can do for you in the act of experiencing therapy is usually a much more authentic experience than coming in with a predefined, very clear black and white goal of, this is how I'll know that I'm fixed. This is how I know that I've healed. And I think that as therapists, we spend a lot of time kind of navigating that with people of, here's what we can do and here's what we can't do. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the long and the short of it, I think that my answer is no, you can't right. fail.
If that didn't come through.
Yeah, if that wasn't resounding by all of this.
That's true.
That I think, you know, no, absolutely not. But all of these things are to be navigated relationally.
Yeah.
That fear is something that can be named. And by naming it, we can bring compassion and understanding and hopefully some sort of very practical ways of, you know, supporting that person afraid of those things. Mm-hmm. Maybe tying some of those links back to the past of why that fear might be there and using that as a way of saying, this could be different than that. And by so doing, actually heal some of those mm-hmm. early memories. Mm-hmm. Yeah. What do you?
So I'm going to torture the dance metaphor.
Okay.
You ready? So I am a child of the 90s. And that means that it is, you know, embedded within my bones, several different movies, such as Dirty Dancing, of the learning the dance montage, right? And there's always this point where there's literally so much frustration that both people just throw up their hands and walk away. I can't do this, right? And, you know, 20 minutes later in the movie, they're performing in front of a large crowd and it's the most beautiful thing that has ever happened, right?
It's a great movie.
And everybody feels warm and fuzzy about it. But there is absolutely a parallel in a therapeutic relationship where it's not natural at the beginning. Like, it's really quite an awkward experience.
Yes.
Like, hello, nice to meet you. Let's do this dance together. And so there's some easing in, and there are those moments of, are we even getting this? Like, this is the most awkward thing ever. Yeah. We've been trying this forever. And
maybe we need to take a break.
Yeah. You're stepping on my toes. I need to just throw up my hands and walk away for a while. And in therapy, we actually see that as kind of part of the process. Mm-hmm. And in the coming back together and being committed to each other through the awkwardness and the toe stepping and the challenges of that, what emerges is something, you know, beyond what we could have ever imagined. And because as therapists, we get to go through that process over and over again, we have a lot of trust in it. We know what it means to go through that. But clients don't. And so it's still a very tender, vulnerable, scary thing to kind of put yourself in a situation that includes awkwardness and potential toe stepping and a little bit of pain and maybe some embarrassment and vulnerability for sure, and trust that it is going to take you somewhere beautiful. And we know that and want to carry people through that to the best of our ability.
Yeah. You know, I'm thinking of, as we're saying all of this, there's a lot of therapists out there that don't practice the way that we're talking.
Yes.
And in those contexts, it might genuinely feel like I am failing their expectations of me. And I would just encourage, like, those of you listening to, if you're feeling, whether it's from your own internal constructs or it's a relational dynamic with your therapist, if you're feeling like there's something to pass or to fail, mm-hmm. that you bring that into the space of the room.
Yes.
And you ask that.
Yeah.
And you share that feeling and you share that felt sense of expectation.
Yeah.
Because that may not be the dynamic that is best.
With that posture, I want to add to that feelings of, like, perhaps not failing, but maybe I'm scared that I'm going to let you down. Mm-hmm. That I'm not going to be strong enough to do what you're wanting me to do.
Yeah.
Any of those kind of feelings that you might be sort of holding inside, mm-hmm. not wanting to show it out of that same fear that, oh, well, if I name it, that basically is failing them or basically is letting them down. But those are the types of things that will build templates for you, mm-hmm. of having named. Now, in that situation, there's also then the increased potential that you could be rejected.
Yeah.
That is a legitimate possibility.
Yeah.
as therapy is a relationship, that means that there are potentials for it to hurt you. Mm-hmm. That is real.
Mm-hmm. And what, so I'm going to out therapists just as a whole industry for a second, because it feels like I have the authority to do that. Sure. But because we spend so much time talking to therapists, like truly all over the world at this point, and so many different individuals, what I can say with a lot of confidence is that the vast majority hold the same fear of failing their clients, of not being enough for their clients. And however that presents itself, whether it shows up with, you know, true, genuine vulnerability on the part of the therapist or some less desirable strategies like firing a client because we don't feel up to the task of really helping and we don't know how to own that outright. However that shows up, it is still my true belief that it is that cultural core of all of us being so afraid of not being enough for each other that keeps us locked in that cycle. And that applies to therapists as well, to clients.
Absolutely.
And so whoever is going to be the brave one to name that in the space, sometimes because of the boxes and the rules that are put around therapists, we struggle to be the one to say that. Mm. And it is never the client's job to have more guts in that dynamic. But the majority of the time, if a client brings that to a therapist, they're going to meet that with so much understanding because their body is holding that same fear. And, you know, we talk to people all day long about being able to bring those conversations relationally into the space. And we believe that is a way forward in terms of what we all need to heal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And if it's not welcomed in that space, then that may be a key that this isn't the right dynamic or fit, or we have to take
your therapist failed you. Just kidding.
I was going to say, there's some of the throwback at them if they blame you.
Well,
but it's also about you. So that's true.
Yeah.
It's always about us, not one or the other. I just want that message to come so clearly through this that the answer is no. Mm-hmm. It may be something to be more curious about, of if it feels like that, or if it feels like there are those kind of lingering potentials, like, oh no, what if I do this one thing, or if I don't do this, and that's all to be navigated, I think, relationally. I think there's also very practical things of, I didn't mean to show up 5 minutes late each time, but damn it, like, I can't seem to get here on time. Mm-hmm. Those things can add frustration. Just because, as you mentioned, time is important in the West, especially. But all of that's to be navigated kind of relationally. I'm thinking of one case in particular where I had, this was a couple years ago when we were all still very much, well, it still feels like this, but we were pulled in so many directions and things were falling through the cracks.
That was in the past? Okay. Just checking.
Nice. I feel like we had it more together back then. Maybe not.
I remember missing a couple sessions with this one person that, like, it just didn't make it on my schedule. Mm-hmm. And
it's such a bad feeling.
It was the worst feeling because it's the opposite of my intention, and it did make them feel, and they were able to name this, which I was super proud of them for, but it's also weird to say I'm proud of you when they're mad at me.
Yeah.
But
so
I did.
So proud of you for being mad at me.
Please be mad at me.
True.
I deserve to be mad at right now. Like, I let you down in this way. But just being able to name that was actually so, I think, pivotal in our relationship to build the trust, because they saw, like in starting the next Zoom call where I had missed two, like not just caught it before I was supposed to get on and said, hey, I know that we had a scheduled session.
Just
and
total no-show.
Just complete miss.
Oh, yeah.
They were in my Zoom room and I was not there. Two times. So they said at the beginning of the next call that they were really surprised that I reached out and asked for another meeting and that I showed up. And because of that, they immediately felt softer towards me because they felt that in that it wasn't about me trying to blame them or get out of it or shirk the responsibility, but that I was ready to acknowledge how I had really
screwed
hurt
up.
Them. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was on me. Like, it was not at all about them. And the first session they were charged for, which was fun.
Gosh, you're making me so uncomfortable.
I know.
I know the feeling. Yeah. Like,
speaking of therapists being so human,
deeply in my body.
Yes, it was all taken care of. I don't want to traumatize anybody. Like, we figured it out and we're still together and actually doing amazing work. But I really don't think that we could be where we are without rupture.
That experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And to just to kind of circle that all the way back to us as therapists, feeling like to the fear of disappointing them, like imagine just like, oh, I've let you down.
Oh man, I'm sweating.
Like
in the anticipation for that session.
I remember that was like really early on. Yeah. I remember a week where you finally told me I missed like 4 appointments. Yeah. Like you were a hot mess that one particular week. I don't know what was up with like the planets or something in your computer.
Was up because like it was a bad day.
Yeah.
Bad week. Oh, hasn't happened since then.
I've had a few of those.
Yes, I think we
weeks,
all have.
Not sessions. Weekfuls.
Just the worst to get like a notification that,
someone's in your Zoom room.
Yeah. What?
I'm feeling like compelled to go check my schedule.
I know.
Is everything on right?
But that's the crazy part about the second session that I missed. It wasn't on the schedule.
Mm.
I was in an email that I had sent a confirmation to them. And they had said, great, I'll see you then. And I didn't get that message and I didn't put it in my calendar. So I went in, I used the time to like organize something. Like it was
ridiculous. So you could have been there.
I could have been
there. Oh, God, that's even worse.
I used the time to like organize like meeting agenda or something. I don't even remember. But it was something menial. Like I was just like, oh, great, I get to get this done. You didn't have those 2 hours. You needed to be somewhere.
What were you thinking?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, how about we agree that you can't fail me and I can't fail you?
Or if we step on each other's toes, that is inevitable in the process, that at least on our end, we feel deeply committed to navigating that. And actually really believe that it is the navigation of those ruptures and tense moments that provide so much depth and richness and possibility in therapy.
Yes, it is to me what builds that security.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Thanks so much to our listeners for offering your questions and please keep them coming. We love getting emails and knowing what you guys are curious about.
Yeah, this content is for you. Mm-hmm. And so we want it to be very much relevant to you.
Mm-hmm. So safe journeys, everyone.
We hope that you've enjoyed this podcast episode and that it will aid you in your healing journey.
If you are feeling inspired by something that you heard today and desire to seek out your own therapy, we would encourage you to do so and would be honored to support you in finding a therapist that is the right fit for you. You can contact us by emailing therapy@beyondhealingcenter.com.
If you want to stay connected, please subscribe to this podcast for more episodes, leave us a review, and follow us on social media by searching Beyond Trauma Podcast. This podcast is a project of Beyond Healing Media, a media creation group committed to creativity, community, and embracing the beauty of being human. If you like this podcast, you might also like the other podcasts of Beyond Healing Media.
Notice That is an EMDR podcast hosted by EMDRIA-approved consultants and trainers who use EMDR in their practice.
The Burnout Educator is an interview-style podcast that invites stories from people across the spectrum of the educational system and seeks to see the human inside the role they play. It is our desire that you see parts of your story and those around you in the stories you hear.
The Evidence-Based Therapist is an educational podcast where we read so you don't have to. On this podcast, we discuss seminal, recent, and relevant research on psychotherapeutics and the embodied relational sciences. How do we know what is evidence-based, and how do we use it in our practice? You'll find out on the EBT podcast.